jumping. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of The Warm Down today. I'm delighted to be joined by Ollie Bayliss, who is a researcher for Football Manager and also, seemingly, the go-to guy about non-league football. And there's a lot going on in non-league football that we need to talk about, but something that's pertinent for football of all levels is the Let Fans In campaign. Ollie, thank you for joining me. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, I guess. Not too bad. Ollie, the Let Fans In campaign has took off. It's got almost unanimous support, seemingly. What's the issue holding it up at the moment? And do you envisage fans being back in stadiums in numbers anytime soon?
Yeah, I mean, the Let Fans In campaign is, it's incredible, isn't it? The amount of support it's had and, to see it trending week after week. And if there are no other positives during this period to come out of COVID-19, I think the kind of the strength of the football family and the football family around lower league football is really being shown. It's sort of half succeeded already. So fans are at step three and below, so the level below the National League North and South. Clubs are allowed some fans back at that level. It's going up 30% as of this week, 30% of their capacity. So we're seeing this week FA Cup qualifiers and the extra preliminary round with some fans. So it's working to an extent. Of course, there's still the rest of non-league and the Football League and the Premier League to come, and the rest of non-league, so your National League sides, your National League North and South sides, I know many of them feel that it's about time they were allowed fans as well. You know, if clubs like South Shields or Scarborough are allowed fans in the third tier of non-league, so your Northern Premier League levels like that, then is there really any reason why St Albans City or Concord Rangers in the second tier of the league can't have fans? I don't know. Or the top level. But then I guess you're looking at Notts County and clubs like that. And I think the FA and the government are a little bit hesitant when it becomes stadiums rather than non-league football grounds. It's maybe a little bit hesitant to get fans in. But I think we're moving towards that now.
So as you said, at the moment, step three and below, it's 30% of their capacity. Above that level, so from Premier League all the way through the Football League into Conference and Conference North and South, it's just no fans, a couple of media and the teams, and that is it.
Yeah, that's it. The only thing to look forward to at the moment is the FA Trophy final and the FA Vars final. So the non-league day, as they brand it, that's going to be at Wembley. That's going to be 27th of September, and there will be fans for that. I think something between 5,000 and 10,000 fans.
Oh, that's
hopefully
cool.
That's a pilot event the government are calling that to see sort of how it goes and how they can manage fans in a big stadium like that. So that'll be an exception to it. But at the moment, it's looking like October might be the time when it changes and gets reviewed. I think that's the plan for the Premier League all the way down to the National League at the moment. But even today, clubs like Dorking Wanderers, who are in the second tier of non-league, they're challenging at the moment. They've written to the National League today to ask whether or not actually there's anything legally stopping them having fans at friendly games. You know, when games are official league games, then the league have some jurisdiction. If they're an FA Cup game, the FA have some jurisdiction. Their argument, I think, is it's a pre-season friendly. Actually, is there anyone telling us we can't have fans here legally? They're challenging that, and it'd be interesting to see the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, we've advertised a couple of our games that we've had for pre-season with Stretford Paddock FC. We probably had about 200 turn up for our last two pre-season friendlies. I don't know what the rules are on that. Whether that's allowed. I mean, both of those games were played effectively just in open fields. So I can't stop anybody coming and watching, nor would I want to. But I don't know what the legalities are around it. Also, the level of football that we're playing at, most of the stadiums or facilities that we play at are very much an open field or a school field or something along those lines. I don't know what the ruling is in terms of allowing people in. A little bit of an announcement for the audience is that we've just secured Drawsden FC Stadium for the coming season, which has a capacity of 3,500. What's the rules on our level? Do you have any info on that, Ollie? Or can we do whatever we want, technically?
Yeah, so you'll be considered grassroots football. So anything below the sixth tier of non-league football is considered grassroots, where you can have spectators, say the government, say the FA. There's no cap on how many you can have. Obviously, they've got to be socially distanced and they've got to be in discrete groups of six, which I'm not quite actually sure what that means or how that works. Basically, everyone should be behaving themselves, be socially distanced, not near anybody that isn't from their own household. But apart from that, you're allowed spectators. And I guess the aim is to not go over the top and not be ridiculous with it and to not, you know, absolutely fill stadiums. You've still got to be mindful of how much space you've got within a stadium. But as you said, most clubs at that level are playing in a public park. So if I want to walk my dog past a game and stand there and watch it, then there's nothing you can do anyway to prevent that from happening. There's nothing you can do to manage it. But yeah, you're totally allowed spectators at that level. And there are some clubs that play, you know, in what was the old Step 7 and below in grassroots football that get a couple of hundred yeah. fans. And there's nothing wrong with that under the guidelines.
Yeah, so if you want to come and watch live football in Manchester, we'll see you down at the Butcher's Arms watching the paddock, hopefully. So the FA Cup obviously kicks off this week, or has been kicking off this week. There's been games already. And we're seeing hashtag United enter the competition for the first time. Two parts on this question, really, for you. One, what is the impact of what hashtag United are doing on lower level football around this sort of step? And two, at what point do all of those National League, League Two sort of clubs come into this? What does that effect have them? Because at the moment, as we've seen, there's fans allowed in the FA Cup games at the moment. But surely as we get further into the rounds, at some point that becomes unsafe.
Yeah. So at the moment, it depends on what level you're at as to whether you're allowed fans. So Step 3 and below are allowed fans. And I think off the top of my head, the point where National League North and South clubs come in at the moment, that's due to be Saturday the 3rd of October. So hopefully it's in October. I think still the plan is some stadiums open to some extent by October. So hopefully we'll get to that point where the National League clubs start coming in, that fans will be allowed in the stadium. Otherwise, you could end up with this weird scenario where it's almost worth rearranging a game so that the lower league side hosts it, because then you can have fans and then you can make money and then you split the gate. You know, if you're a Northern Premier League team and you're drawn away against a National League team, well, you could both get together and say, why don't we host it? We're now 600 fans then. We can charge £10-15 per person at the gate and we can split the money. We're going to get in these weird situations where that almost makes more sense for clubs. But hopefully, by the time the bigger teams get into the competition, we should be allowed fans. And I think, interestingly, the FA Cup this season as well, they've got rid of replays. And in fact, in the qualifiers, they've got extra time as well. So 90 minutes, then straight to penalties. So you do kind of want to be hosting games if you can, because there's no, you know, we'll play the away game first, we'll get a draw and we'll get back to our place and we'll beat them. That's gone this season. It's going to be 90 minutes in the qualifiers and then straight to penalties. So you want to be at home and you want some fans cheering you on if you can.
And we were saying earlier, the FA have halved the prize money in the FA Cup this year as well, which seems a bit rum considering that fans aren't allowed in. I mean, what sort of effect is this likely to have on the lower reaches of football?
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, financially, it's been a nightmare for clubs in the last sort of 5-6 months. You know, non-league clubs are reliant on fans coming through the gate, aren't they? Spending money in the bar, buying a burger, buying a pie, getting a programme, all that kind of stuff, a raffle ticket. They've had none of that for 6 months. So whilst they're starting to pay out, you know, rates and utility bills and maintenance and all that sort of stuff, they have no money coming in. So one thing they were hoping for was FA Cup starting up, we'll get the prize money at least. And the way it's structured, you even get prize money if you lose in the first round. Well, it's been half this season. So, I mean, it's still not terrible. So a win this week in the extra preliminary round is just over £1,000, £1,125. So, you know, it's not nothing, but it was double that last season, as you rightly said. So it's a little bit frustrating. I think from the FA's point of view, they're struggling financially. They're having to make redundancies. They're not-for-profit organisations. It's not like they're pocketing millions of pounds and keeping it anywhere. They've had to cancel events and games at Wembley, things like that over the summer. So they're struggling a little bit. But there is an argument as to whether or not maybe you drop the prize money for the final and the semi-final. Do Premier League clubs need the £1.5 million they get for winning the FA Cup? Does it really make a difference to Arsenal this season how much they got for winning it? There is an argument you could drop that and that could go an awful long way in the early rounds for non-league clubs.
Yeah, I can't imagine any of the teams that get to the final of the FA Cup are motivated by the prize money of the FA Cup instead of the glory of actually winning the trophy. I'd be shocked if that was the case.
No, especially not when the prize money is what it is. You know, if it was 100 million or something like that, or, you know, Champions League prize money, I gather, is worth winning. I think you're right, the FA Cup, £1,800 this season if you win the FA Cup final. you're not dropping Aubameyang for the final because you're thinking it's not worth winning. You know, at that point, it's the prestige of it and it's the qualifying for Europe and it's winning something, isn't it? It's not, they're not in it for the prize money, the big Premier League teams anyway.
Last week we saw Everton out for North Greenfield United. Do you think we would ever see more of that in the game? Do you think that was something we used to see more of? And do you reckon that's something that paints non-league in a good light if we can get old stars like that to come down and run out for a team?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're seeing it more and more, actually. I mean, Robbie Savage has recently signed for a club that I can't remember off the top of my head. Ricardo Fuller as well, Hanley Town, I think he's joined. Jermaine Pennant's been training somewhere as well. Emerson Boyce, former Wigan player, FA Cup winner, he's signed this season. There's plenty of players. Lloyd Doyley, former Watford player at Kings Langley. There's plenty of players that played in the sort of top level of the game that I think sometimes they just love the game and, you know, they find a nice local club and they've got other commitments maybe in the week and they're doing other bits and pieces, but they fancy playing, you know, playing on Saturday and a Tuesday or as much as they can. And, you know, it's like all of us, well, the rest of us that aren't playing football for money. You know, we enjoy a kick around or playing where we can and when we can. So I think lots of them really enjoy it. And yeah, it's great. It certainly brings in fans. You know, if you find out that Everett is playing for your local, you know, Step 7 side, you're going to wander down and have a watch, aren't you? It's a brilliant draw for fans. It's great for clubs. And actually, sometimes it shows how good the level of non-league is when these players don't necessarily, you know, run riot and destroy teams and score six hat-tricks or whatever. If they actually don't necessarily shine at that level, I think sometimes it shows how good the standard is.
I think something I've noticed, because we've managed to recruit a few players that have come with enormous reputations for what they've done. And even though they are, you know, in the best one or two players on the pitch, it doesn't translate into winning every single game 4-5-6-0. I think every game's still a tactical battle and every game still has its moments. And while it helps having a team full of all of those, it's nowhere near the absolute walkover that you would assume. And I can imagine that being the case if you had, you know, an Evra in the team. It probably raises the level of a certain number of things, but I certainly wouldn't start thinking it guarantees 3 points at all. I think the level is a lot higher than what people would assume, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's 11 against 11, isn't it? As good as one player on the pitch always is. And actually, imagine having a player like Evra in the dressing room. Imagine that as a teammate. I mean, imagine that if you're the normal left back and you've lost your place. I guess you know, no arguments there. But you imagine, you know, at the moment probably they're not using changing rooms, but you know, getting changed in the car park and spraying on your deep heat, and you're looking at the car next to you, and there's Evra getting his kit on. It's brilliant. It must be amazing for those players to play alongside.
Yeah, Evra's getting changed in a gullwing Mercedes as well.
You imagine that on the right wing and trying to you spend the whole game trying to nutmeg him, wouldn't you? You're on the right wing against him.
He played, I think he played left wing, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly on the left side, I think. But yeah, imagine if you were running up against him, you just want to do something, wouldn't you? Beat him once.
I think the players that have come down, certainly those that have played Premier League level, because of how intense the Premier League is, and I think something you can really recognise is, when you see how simple some of these players keep it when they're playing at the top level, and then when you see them come and, like, you see them up close at training when they're playing with players that are a bit of a lower level, and you see the sort of the tricks and skills that they're pulling out of that level, you go, the Premier League is so intense that they just don't risk it and they just try and keep it simple because that's all they're able to manage with the pressure that they're under. Now, I think something when you get Evra or a player of that ilk, even Robbie Savage, when they come down to this level, when they come down to your step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, what you see with them is time and patience and their ability to get their head up and make a pass with no effort whatsoever. And I think that's the major difference, is the amount of time that they're able to get themselves on the ball. And I think that's what separates those very, very top players from some of the lads that are stuck at, you know, step 6, step 7, etc. Because, you know, physicality, fitness, there ain't much difference in that sort of stuff. I think it's that mental ability of being on the ball and playing the right pass at the right time, I think.
Yeah, and it's anticipating, isn't it? it's them knowing what they're going to do with the ball before they've even got it. You know, if you take a terrible footballer like me, someone will pass to me, I'll take a touch, and then I'll look up and I'll think, what am I going to do with it? Good players already know what they're going to do with it before the ball's been passed to them. They've already made that decision in the first, it's a cliche, but the first few yards are in their head, and they've got the touch and the ability to carry it out as well. You know, they're not fumbling around trying to trap the ball three times before they're then trying to do something with it. The first touch is effortless. And yeah, you see that with really, really top players, don't you? Of course, the non-league pitches sometimes be a little bit of a leveller. The odd bobble here and there. You can't always plan for that, however good a player you are.
Yeah, actually, we're lucky with draws, and I think we've got one of the best surfaces in non-league. I'm so glad that we're going to be hopefully keeping that facility open for this season. And I'm looking to try and play football on that surface, because a lot of non-league pitches are terrible, big divots in them, and they start cutting up big time over Christmas. But I saw an article that you'd wrote about the proliferation of 3G and was thinking that more teams would go towards it. I really like the 3G surfaces, and I think certainly at this level, I know they're very expensive, some of them up to $500,000 to kit out a pitch. Do you ever think that we'll start to see them back into the professional game?
I think it's weird, isn't it? You can use them in international football, I think, now. You can use them in the Champions League, in the UEFA Cup, but yet you still can't play in League Two on an artificial pitch. You know, Harrogate have had to rip up their pitch and having to play their first couple of games in the Football League away from home because they're not able to use their pitch and having to convert it to grass. It's a weird situation. I mean, I think lots of people still think of the really old sort of plastic pitches of the 80s and, you know, Luton Town, where it was super bouncy. They're pretty good surfaces now, and actually they're probably better surfaces than you see in a lot of League Two clubs, aren't they? You know, League Two, League One through a heavy winter can get really sort of stodgy.
Have you seen what Tranmere's pitch goes like?
Sorry, say it again.
Have you seen what Tranmere's pitch goes like?
It cuts up, doesn't it?
It's shockingly bad. I think there's more mud than grass. Hard clay mud as well.
In 3G pitches. And yeah, loads of clubs are doing it now. Loads of clubs are replacing them with 3G services, because it means you can get youth games on as well. You can get reserve games in the same stadium. And how great is that if you've got your under-16s, your under-14s or whatever playing in the stadium as well? It really makes the club feel connected, like they're all one team and one side if they can use the same facilities. And you can do it with 3G, and you can hire out your pitch to other clubs as well.
Yeah, you can use it to earn a little bit of cash back, because, you know, as I said, we're taking over Drawsden, but one of the issues with Drawsden is they care for that pitch so much that there was a reluctance to have two teams on there. They don't have a reserves, so it would have been us and Drawsden, and although it's mega unfortunate, I'd rather see Drawsden continue than be able to use their facility. Them resigning for the league really opened the door for us to be able to use this facility, because you know, they literally care for that pitch that much and are that meticulous over it that we was never getting it unless they did resign. With a 4G, yeah, you can probably play back-to-back games on it and you're not going to see any issue with the pitch. It's certainly not like, I mean, I remember Boundary Park when that was basically just compacted sand with a little bit of bristles of green coming through it. It was horrendous. But they're not like that no more. And I think they're very close to grass. We conducted a trial and we do some training at Avro just up the road, and it's a brilliant surface. And it, you know, it's the same every condition. It's fantastic.
And the other thing they help with non-league as well is when you get into November, December, January, the amount of games that called off for waterlogged pitches and frozen pitches and you know, issues with the surface, generally you can get a game on 3G pretty much in any conditions. And actually, especially a season like this where we're starting in September and hoping by April, there's not much room for games to be called off. So it means you can plan for games, and games are almost certainly going to take place. And actually, as well, for clubs, when you're bringing in all your hot dogs and all your beer and everything ready for a game to kick off at 3 and a game gets called off at 2 o'clock, you can be a real nightmare, and clubs can lose out that way. If you know your game's going to take place, you can plan for that. They're really helpful from that point of view as well in non-league.
Yeah, one other thing then before we let you go. We've seen the BBC broadcasting the prelims. Do you think that's something that we're going to see a lot more of? Are you behind that sort of idea? What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's really good. It's something the BBC have done since, I think, 2017, so for the last 3 seasons. And yeah, we saw Squires Gate against Main Road yesterday. And yeah, it's really entertaining and really, I think, really good as well to see how many people were tuning in and how many people were getting involved and watching that. I think personally, I think the national broadcasters, and I think the BBC are really good for it, but I think generally national broadcasters can be sometimes a little bit dismissive of how big an audience non-league can have, because you look at those clubs and you think, right, well, they maybe get 100, 150 on a good day. How many people are going to want to watch it? But actually, there's a lot of people that are happy to watch a non-league game that isn't the side they support, in the way that maybe there isn't in the Championship or in the EFL. Club fans are more interested in the club they support, but maybe not so much always the wider picture. In non-league, there's a bigger community and people are really keen to watch games on TV. And I think it was a really entertaining game yesterday. I think it went down well by the looks of how many people were interacting with it and sharing the hashtag, things like that. I don't know about official figures, but I think it's really good that the BBC do that. I'd love to see more games at that level televised, because I think it's still a very entertaining spectacle. Just because you're watching a game in the 9th and 10th tier of English football doesn't mean it isn't really entertaining. And actually, cameras can get sort of different angles, can get closer to the atmosphere somehow, because they're not restricted in where they can put cameras in maybe quite the same way. And quite often you watch it from a lower angle, which actually I think is more enjoyable. You see expressions on players' faces and things like that you don't always sort of get in Premier League coverage. I think it's really good. And it's really good that the BBC are doing that. I think they're doing it every single round this competition. And actually, they very nearly missed out this time, because the clubs that they were going to do had to forfeit the game due to a COVID-19 test.
I didn't mean to mention that, actually.
I spent it the day before, and I think they did really well to get any game on TV yesterday, so credit to them for that.
So that is something that we are seeing as well, isn't it? Clubs do have to forfeit the tie if they have a positive test for COVID. Do you think that's something... Is that planned to continue right the way through to the final?
It's certainly, for the qualifiers, it's definitely a rule, and I think... I can see why the FA need to do it, because they need to basically rattle through these early rounds, because they need to get them done, hence no replays. But the problem is it penalises teams for being honest and saying, right, we've got a player test positive, we're going to do the right thing, we're going to not play a game for 14 days, and we're going to isolate our players. You're kind of being penalised for doing that, aren't you? You're penalised for being honest and saying this is the situation. And we've had three clubs that have done that in the last week, and they've had to forfeit their games. Mm. Not only do you forfeit the potential of winning a load of money, you don't get fans through the gate, you lose out money that way, and you lose out in a potential in a place in the next round. So it's not hard to imagine a situation where a manager will say,
maybe we don't test.
maybe stay at home, but take the test on the Tuesday after the game just in case, or maybe don't tell anyone if you've got a positive result. You know, you isolate, but not the rest of the squad. I don't know, it incentivises clubs being dishonest or trying to find a way around that system, and I think that's a bit worrying, isn't it? Mm-hmm. No, credit to the three clubs that have been honest and have done the right thing in terms of health and safety, even if they've missed out. But you can see clubs potentially trying to hide positive results because they're going to get penalised if they test positive for COVID-19.
As we mentioned earlier, hashtag are in their first FA Cup game tonight. It will be, we're putting this out today, so it will be tonight, so we'll wish Spencer and the boys good luck for that. So we think it could be possible that we might get to see an actual live hashtag game on the BBC if they make it through this round.
I don't think follow the sort of winner of the previous round. They pick a whole new two teams every time, and I'd say hashtag would be a really good one to pick. A really interesting story, and I mean, credit to them, they're already playing at a really high level of non-league football, considering how recently they've joined. And I think when they joined the pyramid, there was a lot of sort of, I don't know, there was certainly a little bit of a backlash from your traditional non-league fans, sort of, you know, who is this team? And you know, they can put on a couple of exhibition games, but wait till they get to November and, you know, they'll be struggling. Well, they proved everyone wrong. And they were in a good position to get promoted last season, if the season had been made null and void. You'd make them one of the favourites again in the Essex Senior League, surely, this season. And it's brilliant that they're in the FA Cup. They're one of 20 teams, I think, taking part in the FA Cup for the first time ever, which in itself is brilliant, isn't it? I mean, for some clubs, it's the aim is to win the FA Cup. For others, it's just taking part is fantastic. But for players and clubs to say you compete in the FA Cup is brilliant. So, yeah, I mean, good luck to them. And fingers crossed, tonight it'd be great to see them on telly, wouldn't it? And great to see them have a good cup run.
And it seems like every couple of years there's a club which does sort of capture people's imagination like this at non-league. I think you get a lot of these stories. I think AFC Wimbledon was one of the first that I really paid attention to. Then obviously we had FC United did that. recently you've seen Salford do that, and at the moment hashtag United, it seems all of these clubs, when they get a little bit of fire about them, they seem to really rattle through quite a few consecutive promotions, don't they?
Yeah, and what's brilliant is they by and large as well attract a younger fan base. Certainly hashtag United have done that, and non-leagues, certainly some clubs, it's a slightly older fan base, isn't it? And we want to see kids coming to watch non-league football, because it's something that I was brought up doing in the 90s was going along to watch non-league football. And I think in some places it might be dwindling a little bit with how accessible, how easy it is to watch Premier League football and football at the top level. I think some kids are perhaps less bothered about non-league. So what hashtag are doing, which is brilliant, and other clubs as well, Clapton CFC have got themselves a massive following, and Palmers, I know you've featured them, haven't you, on your show. You know, attracting a sort of a younger fan base and using social media. Social media can be a brilliant tool for harnessing a fan base and growing it. And clubs like that are using social media to try and grow their following is brilliant. Hashtag United are one of the best supported teams in that level. And if they go up the leagues, they'll continue to be really well supported. I think they've been a real force for good in non-league football.
Agreed. And I said, good luck to Spencer and all the lads. Hopefully you get through and hopefully you get that. I'd have been going tonight if I didn't have to look after the little one. I'd have made the trip down to go and check them out. But yeah, thanks for joining us, Ollie. Go give him a follow on Twitter if you've got any interest at all in non-league, because I think you've almost made yourself the authority on what's going on in non-league. It seems like you're the go-to guy for it. But thanks for joining us. Please subscribe if you're new, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Laters.